the stages of physical posture or asana and of pranayama go together with a system of personal discipline, which is generally called the niyamas in the yoga system, which means to say that in our personal conduct and daily activity, there should be a method and a procedure, which means to say that everything should have its own time. One of the essentials contributing to success is method in working and procedure of behavior and conduct. One must know what to say at what time, in what manner, what to eat when, in what quantity and quality, and so on and so forth, which applies to body, speech and thought. This is the discipline of the three essential factors which are employed in our daily life: the body, the speech and our thoughts. Everything should have its own time, its quantity and quality. It should not be that the procedure goes on varying every day, because system, whatever be the nature of that system, is a reflection of perfection. Perfection is the greatest of systems. And inasmuch as yoga is a movement towards the highest perfection that is available anywhere, the practice also, even in the lower stages, should reflect this character. Even your time for going for a walk, such a simple and silly thing as it is, may be a disciplined process. As they say, it was the case with the German philosopher Immanuel Kant. He used to go for a walk at 6 o'clock, and everybody used to set their watch. So correctly, he used to go for a walk exactly to the stroke of 6. And he never said 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later, "I am very busy, I got this work, this engagement." Nothing of the kind. 6 means 6, he gets out for a walk. Well, this is only one of the features of systematization in one's life. Because system also reduces the burden of work and the feeling that there is a lot of things to do. The feeling that we have a lot to do is mostly due to chaotic behavior and no system in working. Anything we do anytime, we meet any person at any time, say anything that comes to the mind. This is the reason why we often feel that there is some strain on our heads. The strain is due to the fact that the mind is unable to adjust itself to sudden changes of circumstance. But if it is already prepared, because it knows what is to be done at what time, the strain will not be felt. The strain and the stress that we feel in our life, which has to be avoided, of course, in the way of yoga, is mostly due to unmethodical thinking, speaking and working. This method is called niyama, which has to be coupled with the initial stages of yoga, asana and pranayama. The body and the environment should be kept in such a condition that one feels spirited within oneself, uplifted in feelings, and light in one's personality. What is to be done to achieve this is an individual choice, each for oneself. And the strain that we feel in life is a combined effect of thought, speech and action. The three go together, they work simultaneously. We cannot say which preponderates at what time. The mind feels the strain of life when it is discontented for any reason whatsoever. And contentment is something which most people do not know, because dissatisfaction is often that which goads us into action. We are dissatisfied and therefore we work. But that should not be the motive force for work. Are we working because we are dissatisfied? On the other hand, the reverse should be the case. Because we are satisfied, therefore we work. And as a matter of fact, that work alone can be called healthy, which is motivated by satisfaction. In one of the writings of His Holiness Sri Swami Shivananda Maharaj, he says somewhere, you should be satisfied with what you have, but dissatisfied with what you are. But what we do generally is, we are satisfied with what we are, but dissatisfied with what we have. This should not be the case. We should be grieving because we have not achieved perfection. We are little bodies, small personalities. Almost nobody is before the might of the universe. And our effort should be to approximate ourselves inwardly and outwardly to the extent possible, gradually, towards the perfection that we are seeking. And that has nothing to do with what we have in the form of material possession, etc. The internal feeling of satisfaction and contentment comes on account of an understanding, it cannot come by mere force of will. The nature or the trait which always complains against circumstances outside is that which brings about discontentment. Is there anyone who has no complaint? No one. Everyone has a complaint. But this is not a virtue. It is a defect in one's own makeup. We have always to remember the wise old man's saying and adage that much of what we complain about will diminish in quantity and quality if we remember our capacities and our correct relationship with things. We want certain things to be in a certain way, and it is not like that, so we make a complaint. But why should we expect something to be in that way in which you think? Because you think that your way of thinking is correct, which need not necessarily be so. Or, even supposing that your way of thinking is correct and things are not in consonance with your way of thinking, and therefore there is a source for complaint, your duty is to change it if you can. Then there is no complaint. But if you cannot change it, well, the matter is clear. Then also there is no complaint. Either you change it or you cannot change it. If you cannot change it, there is no complaint. If you change it, there is no complaint. Then why you are complaining? This is a confused way of thinking again. The old saying which I was referring to is, give me the will to change what I can, the courage to bear what I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference. This is an old philosopher saying. Give me the will to change what I can, the courage to bear what I cannot, and the wisdom to know the difference. But we have no wisdom to know the difference. That is why we are suffering. And yoga tells us, be contented. Don't make complaints, and because you are not going to be the gainer, you are only going to be the loser thereby. Because we should not embark upon anything which is not going to bring any benefit, either to yourself or to others. It is this purified nature which is psychologically, verbally, and physically disciplined that can actually practice the austerity of yoga. A muddled head cannot practice yoga. A busy body cannot practice yoga. Because all distractions are contrary to the requirements of yoga. These peculiar traits to which we have been making reference are the outcome of what they call rajas, or an unduly activated personality beyond the limit. There is no composure in ourselves because there is no belief or trust in the truth that there is in our own selves the seed of what we are ultimately seeking. The seed is in ourselves, and the vast universe of objects through which we seek satisfaction is only a ramification of this seed that is within us. We are a center in which the universal values are rooted, and everyone is such a center. And so it is said that reality is that which has center everywhere but circumference nowhere. It has no limitations, therefore it has no circumference, but every point is a center of the universe, and therefore it has center everywhere. Every atom of the world is a center of the universe. It has as much capacity to reveal truth as any other point in the world. It is an absence of this knowledge that makes us discontented, distracted, and makes us impossible to compose ourselves. All things are finally to converge upon oneself instead of one's being a center of centrifugal forces from which energies shoot off in diverse directions, like the rays of the sun. The purpose is to withdraw these rays, make them converge upon the center, so that a time will come when the powers of nature will begin to vibrate through your body. The world, which is so vast and unimaginable and frightening, is not really so vast and frightening as it appears to be, because its tentacles are rooted in our own bodily cells. In one sense, we may say the strings with which are operated the movements of the puppets of objects outside are connected to the various centers in our own body. This is why yoga scriptures and masters tell us that the Brahmanda is in the Pindanda. The macrocosm is in the microcosm. The whole banyan tree, which is very big and vast and expansive, is in a very tiny seed. This is to give an analogy of how the macrocosm can be in a microcosm. Such a terrible tree, so weighty and expansive, is in that tiny seed. How is it possible? And this wondrous universe is within us. This is what the yoga tells us. That which strikes us with awe and astonishment, that which we regard as most miraculous and unimaginable in might and magnificence, All that is within us. Chandogya Upanishad tells that all the vast space with all its rainy clouds and the shining suns, that is within us. The yogi therefore is not concerned with the world outside. This is a very essential point to remember. Because all the worlds are inside him. He does not run about like a busybody here and there, setting right things and putting things in order. There is no need to do any such thing. He can put everything in order within himself. And correspondingly everything else also outside will be set in order. This is an important thing to remember in yoga practice. The yogi is not concerned with the outside world. Because the outside world can be operated from within. And it is connected with him even in the minutest of details. Not merely generally speaking, but even in details it is connected with him. Every atom of the universe is connected with the cells of the body. You can imagine what powers you have, what capacities are hidden within us, and what are our potentialities. Other day, some funny friend met me and he was saying, E is equal to mc squared. Well, this is an equation of Einstein, which says that an enormous amount of energy is contained in even the smallest quantity of matter. And analogically they say, 2 pounds of ordinary coal, when converted into energy, can be equal to all the energy that is produced by the dynamos working everywhere in the United States for 2 months continuously. What energy they will produce, how many dynamos are there in the United States, nobody knows. And that much of energy in 2 pounds of coal. You know the power of the atom bomb? How small it is? You can devastate half the earth. One atom can contain so much energy. And what will be the energy of your whole body? How many atoms are there? And why do you look like a small monkey when there is so much of strength within you? If one atom has such energy, what will be the energy of your whole body? You can simply blow the mountains if you want. But you cannot digest even 1 pound of milk. So much weakness. Because we have become exiles from our own realm. We have been banished from our own kingdom, like culprits. And we have lost our heritage. We are not citizens of the very land to which we belong. Wonder. This is really a wonder. The world, which is our mother, is regarded by us as a stranger. And therefore, the mother feels sorry for the state of affairs that we are in. The energy that is to come to us from the whole creation outside is cut off from its entry into our body on account of the egoistic affirmations with which we have identified ourselves. the yoga system is the final blow that is dealt at the root of this egocentric personality. And to lay this final stroke upon the center of the problem, so much of preparation is made, like a huge ceremony or a celebration or a function which may take place for 1 hour on some day, and for which you go on making preparations throughout 1 month. 1 month you are working for a celebration that it will take place for 1 hour only. Likewise, some great function is to take place in the form of yoga meditation, and for that so much of preparation is being made. It is the glorious consummation that is called meditation, towards which we are moving. And the beauty of the function and the perfection thereof depends upon the meticulous care that you take in the preparations you make for it. There is no use laying too much stress on merely the achievement, only the function, only the dinner or the lunch that is to be given that day. Well, that is important enough, but how much effort is to be put forth for it? The niyamas mentioned by Patanjali are, generally speaking, the necessary disciplines of body, speech and mind. And we are averse to discipline because we have been brought up in an atmosphere of enjoyment of senses and too much of social contact. We have been brought up like that by your parents, by your teachers, by your friends, and this education, this culture, this civilization, which has gone into our blood, makes it impossible for us to follow any system or any kind of discipline. It is therefore necessary to awaken ourselves into the seriousness of the matter and forget the past. Never, it is never too late to mend, and take earnestly to this practice. Purity of body, speech and mind is emphasized by Patanjali, which he refers to in a single word called shaucha. Pure thoughts, pure words, and pure diet, pure physical contact, pure sensory activity. You should not see anything that is disturbing, you should not hear anything that is disturbing, and so on and so forth. Nothing that is going to defeat your purpose should become the object of the senses. The body should not come in contact with things which are going to stir up passions within us. And we should not speak what is not going to benefit either ourselves or others in a positive manner. And the mind, of course, the supreme factor of all, is to be kept in perfect control. The Bhagavad Gita has a beautiful description of this discipline called Manasika, Vajika and Kayika Tapas, which will bring you the needed satisfaction, the contentment, santosha, without which tapas or austerity is not possible, all which are brought together in what is called Kriya Yoga. Kriya Yoga, according to Patanjali, is this combination of some of the principles of the Yamas to make it possible and easy for us . The system prescribes also certain adventitious practices like study of the holy scriptures and a perpetual remembrance of the presence of God. The practice of the presence of God is ultimately the key to success. Sahanis tan mahachidram sajanda jadamukada yan muhurtam thanam vabi vasudevam najindraye, says the Pandava Gita. Which means that all sorrows befall us, calamities come upon us, everything becomes difficult and the whole horizon looks dark before us, as if there is no hope at all. The moment we forget the existence of God, and one of the main teachings of the Sufi school of mysticism is that what we call samsara or the life of earthly bondage is not merely the world that we see outside. Samsara does not mean this world in which you are living. Samsara is a name given to the forgetfulness of God. The moment you forget the existence of God, you are in samsara. Merely because you are living in a world of trees and mountains, it does not mean that you are in samsara. Samsara is an entanglement of consciousness. It is not merely a physical location of your body in the world of this astronomical wonder. So, all these are regarded by Patanjali in his Yoga Sutra as a combined necessity to bring about an order in our life. Shaucha santosha tapas svadhyaya Ishvara pranidhana, as he calls it, which can be interpreted in the necessary intensity each one by ourselves according to our own conditions of living, strength of mind, and so on and so forth. But what it finally means in essence is that there should be a stipulated method of thinking, speaking, and acting. You must know what you will do at what time. Then you will see that success is not far to seek. Even in the ordinary life of this world, not merely in the spiritual field, because method or system is the way by which we focus our energies. And wherever there is a focusing of energy, there is strength. Just as a focused beam of sun's rays can burn things, while the dissipated rays do not do that work. It is therefore necessary to have a systematized daily routine. You must know when you will get up in the morning. You will know what you do after getting up, whom you will see, what you do with that person, how much work you will do, in what manner, at what time, including even such minute details as bath, walking, food, etc., even the time of going to sleep, what you do before going to sleep, what will be around you, what should not be there, all these things should be at the tips of our fingers. This is method, this is system, this is niyama. And when this system is introduced into our life, we become ready for the higher practice. Each succeeding step becomes easy of approach and practice when the preceding step is firmly placed. We have again to remember that we should not take an advanced step unless the earlier step is well placed. Hurry and too much of enthusiasm is not called for. What is required is pure understanding of a dispassionate character by which you know your strengths as well as your weaknesses. whatever your weaknesses are, they must be overcome by the strength that you have. And in this manner one has to be very dispassionate. Because we are going to open our hearts before the truth of all truths, the great reality before us. And nothing can be hidden from its eyes. Thus, therefore, those the preliminary introductory remark which the great sage Patanjali makes for the glorious destination ahead of us. Hari Om.